My name is Aaron Pierce. I'm the executive director of Steiger International. We are a worldwide mission organization that's focused on what we call the global youth culture. So a couple of you here with the session I did yesterday, we talked about what is the global youth culture. Basically, the idea there is young people all over the globe today are more similar than ever before because they're connected like never before. And so they're influenced by similar voices. So for me, this was really, that my eye was open to this one time. So I was part of a band called No Longer Music. Actually, my parents started this in the 80s in Amsterdam. I was on tour and we were going to Iraq. So you imagine I was part of this rock band performing in Iraq, and I thought, how in the world is this going to be relevant to a bunch of Iraqi kids? And what I found is the answer is it's very relevant because they're all on YouTube and various social media platforms, and they're very engaged and aware of what's going on in the world. And so you have this incredible connectivity of the globe where they're more, they're influenced by similar voices, and so they have similarities like never before. A lot of those they're superficial in nature, where it's like trends and fashion and music, but a lot of it is much deeper as well in terms of their view of the world. So it doesn't actually matter if you go to the Muslim world, the Hindu world, or the post-Christian world, or wherever. What you find is that the worldview of the global youth culture is secular humanism. And a lot of that worldview is shaped actually by artists, creators, and influencers. And so it's an interesting thing. In fact, I was going to jump in here and just ask a question here, because the term influencer is an interesting term, because it's kind of a new term. In one sense, of course, we know what someone that influences people is, but that's actually not, this is a little more specific. So just open up for a question. What do you think the term influencer means today? I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Yeah.
It seems like it would be someone who specifically is trying to influence a certain perspective or belief or action of some kind.
Yep. Yep. What
Reach mobilizer.
What's that?
Mobilizer.
Sure. Yep. Trendsetter, you said, yeah? Other thoughts?
They'll have a lot of followers that will be listening to what they say.
Yeah. So a lot of that is kind of the generic idea of influencers. This is actually becoming more and more specific to essentially social media influencer. It's basically someone, so okay, do you guys all remember the crazy story about the fire festival?
Yeah.
So this is when influencer became a thing. Because what happened is, if you didn't see the documentaries, they're pretty interesting. And if you've done major events, you cringe because all the hard things, the bad things that go wrong with major events, they had happened. But the point is, what they did is they got all these influencers, supermodels and just random people that have a lot of followers, to they paid them to say that they were coming to this festival. And it was geared towards like the ultra elite wealthy, and it was super, super expensive, and it was crazy. So all these people were like, wow, this is gonna be amazing. We're gonna come to this crazy festival in the Bahamas, and there's gonna be models and great weather and all this stuff. And when they showed up, it was like a refugee camp, no joke. It was like crazy bad. But that was really the idea of influencers. In fact, now there's actually laws being put in place to hold influencers accountable for what they put out, because except for one of the influencers that paid, none of them made mention that they were being paid. Like one of them put like a hashtag ad. Every other one, it was just like, and so it basically they deceived a bunch of people. And the question was, how culpable should influencers be in a situation like that? So this whole idea of influencers is kind of taking on a shape of these people that are social media influencers. Now, what's really interesting to that is social, being an influencer in that sense does not equal substance at all. All it means is that you have the ability to move the needle when it comes to usually selling something, right? And so influence doesn't equal substance, it doesn't equal character, it doesn't equal anything like that. It just means for some reason, you have a lot of followers and you're able to get those followers to do something. So that's an interesting thing. And I think as followers of Jesus, we need to look at that a little bit, go, well, how does a follower of Jesus live in that space, right? Because I think that idea of being an influencer and not having substance can be true in the Christian world as well. And just because you have the ability to influence doesn't mean that's about wisdom or character or depth. And so that's a whole thing related to this that I think is a really interesting point. Now, the idea of artists, creators, the whole idea of creators, and I'll get into this, is this whole rise, especially in YouTube, of people that consider themselves creators and they post content. The whole rise of vloggers and people that produce a lot of like daily or weekly content. These are the people that in the kind of the global youth culture are called creators. And of course, you have your traditional artists. Now, I want to kind of dig into this whole topic, and I'm going to show you some stuff. But it's really interesting how much of an influence, how much of an impact this has. And certainly, we got to be asking ourselves the question: how can this be used properly, appropriately for the gospel? So let's watch this video as an example of content that can be used as a way to kind of challenge assumptions in the world, and then we'll dig into that. So let's look at this. All right. Sorry. Thank you. I was going to show a video, but we'll move on from that. So to me, an interesting idea is this quote. It's an old quote from the 18th century. Let me make the songs of a nation, and I care not who makes its laws. Which is this whole idea that the actually what influences our how we think, how we see the world starts with the artists. These are the ones that change, and that the laws actually are downstream from that. Francis Schaeffer talked a lot about that. And so this is an interesting dynamic of how much art and the creators influence a culture and how much it changes. In fact, you can look at it in the way our laws have changed. Much preceding the whole like change of marriage laws in the U.S., you start to pay attention to pop songs that were leading into that, and that was already beginning to shift well in advance of the law. So the idea is that artists and creators have a greater influence than you might imagine on society. So to illustrate this, take a look at this guy. If you were there yesterday, you'll know, but who is this? Does anyone know who this is? Logan Paul, boom. Very few people in this context know who that is, but he's an influencer, creator, YouTuber. Today he's got almost 20 million subscribers. Posts a lot of garbage content on a day-to-day basis. He's not garbage, but his content certainly is, but he has incredible influence, okay? So to illustrate this, this was him in Dubai not too long ago, just to show you his influence. Right? So it's like ridiculous. That's in the Middle East, and that's the reception he gets at a mall. Okay, so that's the kind of influence these influencers and creators have. What about this person? Who knows what this is? Boom. Yep. Okay, so this is probably like the biggest rock pop star in the world right now. She's kind of taken over Taylor Swift. She's kind of a reaction to Taylor Swift, who's kind of the nice girl, or was the nice girl, and this is kind of the I don't give a whatever girl, and kind of more real, quote unquote. This, and she's huge. So this is her in Prague like 2 weeks ago, and this is the kind of impact she has. So again, that last line there was "we're all the same," which is interesting when you consider the global youth culture. And that last line in that song was "we're all the same." And I mean, they know every lyric of her, you know, and of course that's how it works. But again, and I mentioned this already, the predominant worldview of the creators today is secular humanism. This is what is being pushed out there. And so God has been replaced. Man is at the center. Just do what makes you happy. Do what fulfills you. There is no truth. Pursue your truth, whatever that is. And it's this idea of kind of secularism, which kind of religion has been pushed aside. Relativism, there is no absolute truth. It's all preference and tolerance, which means you can't criticize someone else's idea. Right, which is of course a poor view of what tolerance means, but that's what it means in this context. And so this is the worldview. The challenge is once you once a society accepts a worldview, it tends to work out the logical consequences, and the logical consequences of the secular humanistic worldview are loneliness and meaninglessness. We have a global culture that is more connected than ever before, but has no sense of how to have real, deep, meaningful relationships. Their view on sexuality has destroyed that. You have incredible loneliness. The rise in depression, studies are saying it's actually not depression, it's just loneliness. And then you have this deep sense of meaninglessness because the secular humanistic worldview doesn't offer transcendent purpose. Because if you're just evolved, your whole life is just pursue pleasure and avoid pain and then die and you're part of the dirt, what purpose ultimately is there? And so people want to escape that. A lot of times with things like drugs and sex and alcohol, other times it's just a whole lot of Netflix. And then the other times it's depression and it's suicide. And so these are the implications. So I want to show you another example in the influencer creator world. This what I'm going to show you is a girl. Her name's Elle Mills. She's from Canada, and she blew up. She graduated from high school, started YouTube channel, and got to like a million subscribers within 6 months. And then she had a total meltdown. And I think she perfectly shows us the influence that the creator world has, but also how shallow it is and how desperately people are searching for answers. Now, real quick note, that what I'm gonna show you, this video has a lot of swear words in it. I in no way endorse that, but this is real reality, and I think we can all handle it. But that's a fair warning. If you don't wanna hear that, then walk out now. But again, this is to show you the reality of how people are feeling out there.
When I was a kid, all I ever wanted to be was a YouTuber. All I ever did was make videos.
Hey, who's this?
Oh, it's me.
Funny enough, I was actually voted most likely to be a YouTuber in high school. And after I graduated, I made a promise to myself that I was gonna do it. I posted.
But answer this. What would you do if you achieved your lifelong dream faster than you expected?
Moving on to other news, Filipina-Canadian YouTube star Elle Mills won Breakout YouTuber for the 10th Annual Shorty Award.
You've definitely had moments over the past year that have brought you to 1.2 million in the span of 6 months.
Do you guys know who Elle Mills is?
She is someone who I think is pushing the boundaries of YouTube.
Elle Mills.
Elle Mills.
Elle Mills.
Elle Mills. Elle Mills.
I'm good, how are you?
And always feel this overwhelming pressure. My life just changed so much so fast. My anxiety and depression keep getting worse and worse.
I'm crazy for you.
I started getting panic attacks and it started to scare me. I'm literally just waiting for me to hit my breaking point.
What do you think? Pretty intense, right?
Very honest.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Yep. That's what's interesting about the whole creator YouTube world is that there's this sense of it's okay to be honest, almost glorifying it to an extent. But there's a real almost trend to be open about your mental health issues and the things you're struggling with. But people love her because she's honest and because people identify very much with what she's going through.
This carries much quicker. Back in the day, rock stars would do this and be on radio shows and in magazines, and not everyone would see it. And now you've got all these followers that are following every bit, and so it's out there so quick.
Yep.
So the impact is yep. So fast.
Yep. Yep. And actually, to kind of add to that point, what people and I think maybe a lesson that we can take is that actually, even though she's really great at her production, videos that go big on YouTube and social media are not necessarily highly produced. They just connect. It's the personality, it's the authenticity, it's the You know, it's storytelling. Storytelling matters. But man, people connect with her because she's real. And there's a lot of people like that, where that people identify with that. And so you look at a lot of these YouTubers that blew up, their early stuff was very unproduced. They eventually got some money and then it got better. But it's not necessarily the production value that draws the following. It's that people feel a connection. They identify with that person. They feel like that's my person, right? That's who I can connect with. And so she definitely represents that. Other thoughts, questions?
I think when Cardi B came out of just like her lifestyle and then became a pop artist, my sister was like, oh, this girl's it. Like, I connect with her. I'm like, you have nothing in common with her at all. Like, literally nothing. But it is insane how it's almost like the way the enemy uses these people too,
yep,
to like change their mindset immediately just because of a song. Or even Chance the Rapper, the dude's like incredible how he does this stuff, but his lyrics, it's like, how great is our God,
yep,
in the middle of a song, but then he talks about weed,
yep,
and a few lyrics down, you know. So it's just like a very interesting generation with music and pop culture. And we were just talking about how Kanye has it, like,
yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, yeah, Sunday Morning Kanye or whatever. So it's,
yeah, like, who knows what, we'll see what happens there. But yeah, that, if he actually is, I mean, that'd be cool. But,
yeah, yeah, it's just very interesting, yeah, how like a lot of these young people are seeing that, but it's being portrayed as, to me, I feel like sometimes it's just to look good instead of the actual gospel happening. And being,
yeah, there. Yep, yeah, yep.
Your system. The other thing behind this is money. I mean, what's driving this? All advertisers want is eyeballs.
Of course.
And so corporate money that's looking for getting to a market is using, yeah, these people and burning them up. And
totally.
You've seen that.
Totally.
This is not a new thing. This has been going on for years.
Ever.
And years and years. And so that is what's so sad here, is it's destroying not only those young people, but it's destroying the people that,
yep,
they saw.
And absolutely.
And it's just, you know, such a cynical, horrible.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's how these YouTubers make the money. It's advertisements, it's product placement, it's merch. That's, yeah.
It also makes me think, like, for all of us watching this in this room, if you saw this video, I feel like there's a rise in all of us to, like, someone should do something, you, yeah, you know? Like, someone's got to help her. But it's kind of like, well, but someone else will. And I wonder, when she released this, how many people had access to her or not, and did or didn't do anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
It sort of makes me think about, like, you know, I feel like when I walk by someone who's in need on the street, you know, you kind of have that same, oh, they're obviously in need, but it's not my job,
yeah,
to interact, or,
yeah,
or,
yeah,
or is it?
Yeah.
I don't know the rules here.
It's good. It's a good question.
Sorry, are you going to touch on maybe our role as possibly being influencers, or,
yeah,
using or not using it?
Yeah, we're gonna get into kind of principles and ideas of how to use that to some extent. Yep. Yeah.
In your research and R&D, whatever you do,
yeah,
how far do you feel like the church is behind the curve?
In terms of using this stuff?
Youth leaders being, and pastors being equipped to deal with what's happening on the global social.
Well, so on one level, I would say some people are going to be called to be the Christian version of this stuff. And I don't mean that in a negative, like in a positive, effective way. But like at the same time, I think sometimes trying to be something you're not is not a good idea. And put it on your dumb social, you know, here's my Instagram, that, you know, it's just like, come on, because what people need, what people like that, not just her, but people like her need, is real relationships with people who care for them. And actually there is a counter reaction. So especially in the Western world, where we've had the internet and social media longer than, you know, Eastern or other places, there is now starting, we recognize that we're addicted to our phones. We recognize that we're seeing filtered reality, that people's lives are not as perfect as it's perceived on social media. We recognize that we're depressed because of it. So a lot of people, even in the secular world, are starting to say, you know what, there's like whole places where you can detox and disconnect. And so I actually think if you want to be on the forefront, go to that space.
Yeah.
Create it, which is like, you know, the church is all like, how do we do digital? Which we should, and we need to, But you want to be on the edge, go to a place where they can disconnect and they can develop real relationships, because that is something they don't have. So that, to me, that's like, now you're thinking ahead if the church wants to do that. Because we get it. Now, it's not just Christians saying this is bad. It's people in the secular world recognize the negative impact, and they're starting to have, you'll see a lot of the influencers that I follow, they'll take 30 days off because they know they need to and stuff like that. So that's how I would start to think about it. So, yeah. Yeah.
Well, so I was riding in the car with a friend this last weekend, and going through random songs from when we were teenagers. He pulls up this song from Papa Roach and says, "Do you even care if I die bleeding? Would it be wrong? Would it be right if I took my life tonight? Chances are that I might. Mutilation out of sight. I'm contemplating suicide. Because I'm losing my sight and losing my mind. I wish someone would tell me I'm fine." This is someone, like, he wrote this to the public, and he doesn't get a response because, you're right, it is about money, and there are ads, and they almost need you to be broken and hurt like that because it gets the views, that gets the ads that give them money.
Yep.
And Ed Sheeran, even, I mean, he's massive. He's up there with Taylor Swift. He said, "I used to think that nothing could be better than touring the world with my songs. I chased the perfect picture of a perfect life. They painted it wrong. I think that money is the root of all evil, and fame is hell." I think there's something unnatural about being famous.
Sure.
To that extent, when you can't step outside and in a small town, and someone doesn't recognize who you are and knows exactly what you do with your life. There's something unnatural about that. We were never made to be put up on a pedestal. Christ is the famous one. He's supposed to be the one that people look towards, and instead of elevating him, we're elevating humans, but we can't handle that pressure. There is a lot of pressure, and this poor girl is crushing underneath of it, but no one will help her because they need her to be that way.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that, because so this whole creator influencer world has created an obsession with fame and being followed. Right. So your identity and your worth is wrapped up in your numbers. And here's the thing, we all believe that we're on the precipice of going viral, right? So even if I don't have a lot of followers, I'm about to. And so I act as if I am. And also, I'm never quite satisfied, because the reality is, like anything in life, most people are not going to get famous. Most people are going to have, 100 subscribers, if that. But they still have the same issues that people with major, because their whole identity is still wrapped in their followers and their subscribers and their likes. And so it creates a lot of issues, kind of what you're describing. It doesn't have to just be the famous people. It's even all of us. So, yeah. Other thoughts? So you had mentioned it. You hear that and you're like, they need to hear the truth, right? Someone's got to do something. One thing I was going to mention, like when Al Mills posted that video, people were like, "Man, you're so great. We're with you. So brave." But it was a lot of like it reminded me of this. My a little while ago, a friend from high school who had a son similar to my age, my son, posted on social media that his son was had a serious form of cancer and was going into surgery. And I was pretty heartbroken, obviously. And then I started to read the comments. And the comments were like, sending positive vibrations your way. Good thoughts and vibrations and things of this nature, right? And that's kind of the same stuff that was going to Al Mills. The world knows there's a problem. The Al Mills of the world know that it's not adding up. I just did a focus group with a bunch of kind of secular young people in my hometown last weekend, and every one of them talked about how materialism doesn't satisfy. And how they're searching, they want a life of purpose and meaning, but they have no idea where to find it. And they have generally rejected the church as something that's not relevant to life. So we need to tell them the truth. We need to be where they are, which means we need to be on these platforms. But we've got to figure out a way to speak in their language, and we need to understand where they're coming from so we can challenge some of the assumptions that they have about the world. So I showed this in my seminar last time, but I think this is an important point that I want to illustrate, because I think this graph that I'm going to show you explains to me why often we're not able to be effective in any of our evangelistic efforts, including kind of on the online platform. So if you consider how people view Christianity, and on the left you have people that have a biblical view. They're followers of Jesus. you know, the Bible is their you know, compass. On the far left, you have people that are legalistic, so we're putting extra barriers in the way. Come to Jesus plus. And then as you move along, you have people that have a sympathetic or favorable view of Christianity. Then people that have an apathetic view, don't really care one way or the other. Then cynical, negative, and finally anti-Christian or hostile. Okay, so people can have these views. The challenge for us in America especially is that the majority of evangelistic efforts are geared towards the nominal. And that's because historically in America, we were a nominal nation. We were a Christian culture. 80 whatever percent of people identified as a Christian. They had a certain biblical worldview. And that's why a lot of our evangelism was, if you were to die today and stand before God in heaven and he were to judge your life, would he let you in? Well, today, that presupposes a lot of things that the average young person in particular doesn't necessarily hold to be true. And so and this is a challenge, especially in the context of this, because the heroes of the past were reaching a different audience. And a growing percentage of the people in our culture today are apathetic, cynical, and anti-Christian. And so if we're going to engage them on any level, relational, proclamation, or digital, we've got to understand who we're talking to and how they see the world and the assumptions that they have. And so that means that it's a secular worldview, and it's one in which we actually have to overcome objections or obstacles that stand in the way of the cross. And I think that digital means are an amazing way for us to do that. And so that's what we're going to talk about. Again, the challenge here is the gap between the church and this global youth culture. And so even in our own cities, we're talking about cross-cultural missions, because within the church, we have our customs and our language and our kind of way of doing things that is literally foreign to the world all around us. And so in order to engage them, we need to engage them like we're reaching an unreached tribe in a jungle somewhere. Right? Yes, sir.
Then another way for them to come in our church, they have to be missionaries.
Boom. Yeah. And so often what we're asking, because the old model was come to us. Come to my church, come to Christmas, come to Easter, come to my pancake breakfast on Saturday morning, whatever, but come to me. But what we're asking people to do is to be the missionaries, to enter into a foreign culture with a foreign language and to adapt when we should be the ones that are going where they are. So that's really well said. Any thoughts on that? Thank you. So my view is this: artists, creators, and influencers have an amazing ability to bridge that gap. In fact, this is an incredible opportunity for us to do that and to be able to bridge that gap and to bring the church into the world. So here's one example. This is a band that we're connected to in our mission. I'm just going to show this video just as an illustration of how we use music, but then we're going to get into kind of the digital and the creative side as well. So let's take a look. This is one of our artists, and for years they've been going to secular environments, festivals, clubs, nightclubs, and using creative means to share the gospel message and to do that in a way that connects with someone that would not normally step foot into a church.
Right.
And so the key in doing that, as with anything, is you got to know your audience. Because one thing we in the church are guilty of often is answering questions that people are not asking. And so we need to know them enough so that we can see a lot of our art has to be based on knowing the people that we're trying to reach so that we can speak to those challenges and those questions that they have. So for example, in this performance, one of the things that you hear sometimes in the secular world is that if there is a God, he's kind of apathetic or doesn't really care. And he doesn't interfere with my life, and he certainly doesn't care about the pain and the struggling that I'm going with. So in this performance, one of the things that they do is we show, we have a story that revolves around a guy and a girl. And the guy seduces the girl and end up, through a creative way, showing that the guy ends up abusing this girl, which is reflection of the reality of our world. So one of the things as Christian artists we tend to do is we tend to tame things down to the point where we're actually not reflecting the brokenness of the world, which people actually really identify with. And good art actually provokes, and good art actually evokes in a reaction. So actually the way to judge good art is not so much by its aesthetic, but by its reaction. The reaction that it creates in the viewer. That is the way you actually judge good art. And so part of that as Christian artists is we need to reflect the broken reality around us that people identify with. And so in this case, we show how this girl is abused, and it's a really intense, powerful scene. But then what we do is with this character who represents Jesus, the girl is on the front of the stage kind of after this, and Jesus picks her up and literally cries over her. And it's a really powerful moment because it shows that people's pain matters. That the suffering that they're going through, that God is not indifferent, right? I mean, that's the ultimate message of the cross, right? Is that God is not indifferent to our suffering, to our pain, that he sent Jesus. And so how can we communicate the truth of the cross in a way that connects with the secular audience, in a way that provokes a reaction in a proper sense? And so you can do that through music, you can do that through art, because the art and media is a powerful tool, right? And Jesus himself was a brilliant storyteller, which of course is a form of art. And one of my favorite examples of art as well is in Nathan in 2 Samuel, when he basically told the story to King David, and then, you know, the whole idea of the guy, and then he's like, you're the man, and basically uses art as a way. That's the beauty of art, is it allows you to communicate a truth in a different way that people say, yes, I resonate with this truth. So especially in a secular context, when in America, even though we have a post-Christian culture now, we can still, for the most part, a lot of people still recognize the religious symbolism, right? Or the Christian language. So if you begin to use kind of understood religious symbolism, people say, yeah, I know what that is. That's the Christian message, and I'm not into that. But if you're able to communicate those truths in a different way, in a kind of an unexpected way, And then reveal that who you're talking about is Jesus. You create this tension where it's like, wow, I resonate with that truth. I resonate with what you're saying there, but I'm not supposed to like this Jesus. And so that's the power that art can have if you do it really effectively. Now, the key thing, though, for artists, for Christian artists in particular, is a shift in identity. Because the biggest issue, I think, why Christian artists are not being used as much as we could is because art is a really attractive idol. And we can tend to make art our identity and our idol rather than being followers of Jesus. And I think that if we're going to see artists who are using art, we have to actually lay down the art and say, I'm not an artist, I'm not a creator, I'm not an influencer, I'm a follower of Jesus. And if he wants to use whatever he's given me to reach a dying world, I'm going to do it.
Yes.
But what you see a lot in the arts world, because artists are proud. I mean, we are proud, and we get into things, you know, there's so many hang-ups. But what we need to allow ourselves to die to that art,
yeah,
to kill our art, and to say, Jesus, whatever you want, because my heart is so broken for the L. Mills of the world that I will use whatever you give me to reach them. So that's really a key part in all of this. I was kind of missed the slide there. The other thing is we've got to have substance over influence, right? We've got to be able, if we have to have intimacy over influence. Well, my dad, who's been doing this kind of ministry for years and years, says the authority that you have on stage depends on how you live off stage. And I think a lot of the times that a lot of Christian artists, kind of like you were saying before, a lot of times artists don't have that authority and power because they live such compromised lives. And so we've got to have the substance more than we pursue the influence. And we've got to have that intimacy with Jesus. And it's through that that you see that authority and that power that comes through the message when you communicate in the arts. The other thing is that ultimately, I don't care what it is, what strategy, what methodology, what system you have, if God's power is not in it, it will not work. And in the reverse, if God's power is in it, he can use any dumb thing to reach people. So the first principle is God rewards those who seek him with a desperate heart. And the idea here is, what if instead of spending 10 hours rehearsing or editing a video, what if I spent, for every hour that I edited my video, I spent an hour seeking God? What would happen, right? Then you see the power in our message. Then you see the authority in our message. And so these are fundamentals that get way beyond the practical tools of how to produce a video or how to create a social media following, right? The other thing is we have to have a broken heart. When you watch a video like that L. Mills video, our response should be a broken heart. Nehemiah 1:4 says, "When I heard these things, I wept and I fasted, and from some time I mourned." And I think the idea here is that the extent to which our hearts are broken is the extent to which we'll do something about it. And to me, my natural heart is selfish. And so if the way that I get a broken heart is I start in repentance and I say, God, my heart is actually not cold. My heart doesn't even break for people in my own family who don't know you. Would you forgive me? And would you break my heart? And when he begins to do that, that's when you start to, then because people know the difference, right? Between kind of a slick thing you're saying and when your heart really breaks. And that is true of our art as well. In fact, good art usually comes from a place of brokenness. That's where you see a lot of the best art, like even what you're saying with that lyric, a lot of the art that people resonate comes from a place of deep brokenness. And as Christians, we don't have to be any different. We can come from that place and kind of relate to people, but it's that brokenness that God gives us. So these are our fundamentals. Of course, the other one is audience of one. And then ultimately we do this for him. And that this, again, this is an allure of anything that puts us on a platform, as like you were saying, is that it quickly becomes about us. So we've got to get these fundamentals right before anything else works. Any thoughts or questions before we get into a little practical? Yeah.
I wanted to say that this is really good. I guess the first thing I thought of, which is my being kind of silly to say, but I thought of Taylor Swift's new song "Calm Down."
Yep.
That strictly like calls basically Christians out because of our reaction to, maybe not ours specifically, but like just the reaction the world's perceiving from religious people of transvestites and homosexuality and whatever. And it's giving us the wrong platform. And so then people look at us like, whatever. So, I mean, like you said, with being influenced, and usually good art comes from a place of brokenness. Taylor was probably offended because knowing her, she probably wrote that song with somebody else, but it came from her.
Yeah, that one I'm a little bit, I'm not totally convinced of her motives on that one.
Yeah,
because she was late to the game on that one.
Yeah,
but
you know something happened.
Yes.
Even with her other stuff, like breaking up with people and talking about it. And so it always comes through that. So it's really crazy how it comes back around and how people look at us like,
Yep. Yeah, no, it's good. And she's definitely shaping how people see things. Or I would say she's more reacting to how people already see things. But yeah. Were you going to say something?
No, I was just going to make a comment on the brother. I mean, the Bible says that the devil is the prince of the power of the air, right? So I've always said that what travels along the air, well, the airwaves, right? It's the media. And so if you look at what is happening in media, a lot of it is very demonic, very slanderous. And so I think it's an interesting point. These are just my comments on it, but you know, a lot of this media that's coming out is designed to attack the church, to slander the church. Yeah, have some people overreacted to the sexuality thing in the church and culture? Yeah, they have, but we can't ignore it either. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's not like we just throw it all out the window just because some people are offended.
Yep.
That, that kind of stuff. But anyway, yeah, so I love, I mean, I came in a little bit late, but I love your fundamentals and, brokenness. I mean, my key revelation from what you said was that, like, in artistic communities, connecting to the brokenness, I feel like that's a key for evangelism. I just got that revelation as you're talking to it, because I'm thinking, I'm from California, there's a lot of artistic people. In a lot of artistic communities, they're very resistant to the gospel, probably because they've been hurt or they've been told lies or something. So it's like there's a level of brokenness that has happened in their lives that's caused them to blame God or to be resistant to religion as part of the problem. But it's like, how can we tap into that brokenness and then maybe speak their language to get them back to Jesus?
And I would say even identify with it, because we're all broken too, and to not create a us versus them thing. You know, we all need the Savior, all of us. And so it's more of identifying together with that brokenness, but then saying we don't have to wallow in that. There's a way out. And yeah, so that's good. Other thoughts?
I was just thinking, out of the church community of which rise the artists and influencers you were talking about, we have to develop, it seems like, a culture of really being honest and open about a brokenness as a, because there's this niceness thing that still is in the church.
Sure.
Where everybody's got to look good, everybody's got to act good, and we have to get through that, because the artists and influencers are going to come out of that culture, and it's a huge cultural break, and I think it's just a dishonesty in the church.
Yeah, and as here's the other thing, it's messy and it's risky, and so you've got to, because I also think you can overreact, where we kind of like, we air our dirty laundry, you know what I'm saying? And it's like this overreaction to being authentic. There's a place where we need to be open and vulnerable, but some things don't need to be broadcast to the world. And I think some of it is actually self-indulgent, both within the Christian. And so there's a maturity and a wisdom as a pastor that you lead people through. And because I think you see this a lot in the Christian world, where it's like, I'm just being real. And really it's just self-indulgence. But at the same time, in order to identify with your struggle, you do need to share that appropriately. So there's wisdom required in this process. It's a challenge. Yeah.
This is probably its own separate breakout session, but I'm curious on, like, as you're going to these different spaces, like you made the point, our model has been invite them to the church, you know, and that's not working very well. And I've said that Jesus said to go into all the world and preach the gospel. He didn't say to the world, go into a church building and get saved, right? So that's like, we've messed that one up.
Yeah.
So the point is, as you're reaching them in the bars, in the clubs, in the soccer fields, or wherever you're doing stuff that's artistic, what are your thoughts on creating like missional communities, almost like planting churches in those spaces?
Yeah, of course.
Instead of kind of like, okay, now that you're saved, we're going to cut you off and we're going to plop you into our world and like totally rewire your thinking, and you're not allowed to act like an artist anymore because that's weird and that's not how we do it here. It's almost like we're trying to like force a round peg into a square hole. And I'm just more curious on what more organic church model, and if you've thought through all that stuff.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously we're focused more on the artist side. As a mission, we're beyond the arts, where our focus is global youth culture, and we do evangelism and discipleship, as well as local church training. The challenge, I've been thinking a lot about this, but what we do as a mission, the issue is, it's not so much about the art, it's about their view, where they are relative to giving their lives to Jesus. So if you're an anti-Christian or cynical, and then you have an encounter with someone who presents Jesus in a way you've never experienced before, and you develop a relationship, you just, let's say on the scale, just went from a 1 to a 3, but you haven't necessarily given your life to Jesus, you're not now ready to walk into a church that is this foreign culture. But you're one step closer. So what do we do?
Right.
So in our context, the whole idea is we got to start. Discipleship doesn't start when someone gives their life to Jesus. Actually, it can start well before that. And discipleship should start where they are for multiple reasons. One, the whole concept we talk about, you've got to go to them. But the other reason is that if you reach them there and teach them how to be followers of Jesus there, now you're creating a context of disciples who make disciples who make disciples. And we're teaching them in our culture, we say helping them to be followers of Jesus in their scene. you know, how to actually influence now their scene. So what we do a lot, the whole idea here is that we want to see people in the church, sometimes you start new churches, sometimes they come in, but we want to see people a part of the community, you know. Right, exactly. But we have to be, I think one of the challenges, this is what I was thinking about, one of the challenges, kind of the inherent conflict of interest that a pastor has, is that success for a pastor is defined by people in your church, right? And I'm not judging that in a necessarily negative way. That's their job, is to bring people, disciple them. The problem is the easiest, lowest hanging fruit then is the nominal, because they're one step removed from coming to church. But if you're going to reach the cynical and the anti, that's a lot longer process, and a lot of ministry happens outside of your church, and you've got to have a kingdom mentality and kind of a, whether I ever see that person in my church, I want to see this happen. And that's harder. That's a lot harder. And so again, a couple of things we do. One of the big things we've done is community houses. And this meets the felt need of community and the sense of loneliness. So we'll have in cities around the world, we'll have people that rent a big house, 6-7 bedrooms, and they'll live there, 4 or 5 of the bedrooms filled with Christians, and then they'll have a steady stream of guests. Like in one of our places in New Zealand where they get a ton of backpackers, we use the couch surfing network, and they literally have just a steady flow of people staying in their houses and learning, just engaging with them through community. But then they'll have parties and barbecues, and as they go out into the world and share Jesus, they can invite them back and they say, hey, stick around for our Bible study. And they develop relationship, and someone that goes from anti-Christian to, okay, I know these people now, I'll sit down and open the Bible with them and begin to study that. Eventually, they have an encounter with Jesus, and then, yes, we bring the church into that, or a church is created out of that. But that's the idea, is we have to do discipleship where they are. Now, this is a little bit outside the context of just artists, but that is a key part to it. Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to share something about that. I play electric violin in a lot of secular venues, and one of the first thing is that you have to be able to get your foot in the door so that they will want to bring you back. Otherwise, you're just this one time, one out, and then who's that guy? I don't care. He's talking about God or whatever. But one of the things that I found that has been interesting is that, you know, I do a lot of secular music, and then I do a little bit of Christian music, but I tell the stories of the song, maybe how it was written.
It's good.
And when you tell the story, it's not like you're preaching. You said, this is what happened, how the guy, you know, came up to write this song.
Yeah.
So they don't feel so offended when you tell a story, but it is incremental. And I look at some of these places, I think, okay, third time in, I might be able to talk to some people afterwards that will engage a little further. But it is a building process.
Yep.
You know, because when you get in the secular arena, they can very quickly throw you right out because some other band can draw other people that, you know, shoot flamethrowers or whatever.
Yep. Yeah, I think the other thing about that, and this is kind of seeing it more holistically, like in our mission, we certainly do. One of the things in our mission is we want to be relationally present in the scene. And so when you're, as an artist, it's one thing if you're an outsider, it's another thing if you're part of the community. And as you're part of the community, then you're able to communicate how you see the world, not as an outsider, but as an insider. And so that's a challenge, it's a longer thing, But that I think is a big part of it as well. Is your part? They see you as, because you're there. You're with them. You know them. And then in that context, you have a platform to communicate. So let's keep going because we're getting low on time here. One key thing I wanted to say is, and I've already alluded to this already, is good art provokes and challenges the status quo. I think as Christians, we're sometimes a little too nice, and I don't mean that we should personalize things, but art is judged by the reaction it evokes. And I think that to understand one of the things that we need, so the worldview of many people today, the secular humanist worldview, has all these barriers and lies that stand between them and the cross. So Ravi Zacharias talks about the bushes that obscure the cross, and if we want to communicate the cross, we've got to remove some of those bushes. So art can, and I believe should, preach the cross, but art can also challenge some presuppositions, things that stand in the way of the cross. And we can begin to remove those things, and we can do it in a way that doesn't feel personally attacking, but it kind of addresses the assumptions that people have. So, for example, one assumption that people tend to have is that morality is relative. Right? And you hear that constantly, even though you really can't live that way. Well, art has it. You can use art to challenge that assumption. Or you can speak to something that people feel deeply. Like, actually, one of the things that I think is one of the most powerful apologetic conversations is the idea of time. And why do we feel so robbed with time going away quickly? And I think this is an opportunity to speak to that. So I'm going to show you a video as an example of challenging presuppositions, okay? So let's take a look at this.
Time is a strange thing. We measure it, we savor it. Most of the time we waste it. Sometimes it goes by slowly, but more often than not, it flies by. I think of my own life. Every day I wake up, drink coffee, talk, have meetings, chase my son, sleep, and then I do it again. I'll have a thought like, oh, it's Monday. And then suddenly it's Monday again, and then again. But then I think about what's happened in the last year or the last 10 years, and it's a lot. And then there are those things that just make time stop, like when someone you know or love dies. That we know death is a part of life. It's always such a shock when it happens. But why? Why does death shock us? It happens every day, all around us. I think it's because deep down, we don't believe that life should end. We feel like we should go on forever. Death feels like a defect, so we work furiously to fix it. But despite all of our creams and our pills and surgeries and cures, we can't seem to stop the decay. Maybe this deep longing isn't about our bodies and this life. Maybe it's about what comes next. Every tribe and every nation throughout history has conceived of a life beyond this world, beyond our bodies and time, a place where we will go on forever. Maybe this is a myth or wishful thinking, or perhaps it points to something that binds us together. Maybe we dream of a world beyond time. Because we
know
them to die.
So, was the gospel preached? It wasn't, right? It actually wasn't. The gospel is the death and resurrection of Jesus. But what did that video accomplish? What do you think? Yeah.
Curiosity.
Yeah.
Challenge and kind of put a giant crack in something that people rely on that's between them and the gospel.
Yep.
Connected them with death.
Yeah.
Exposed truth.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Any other thoughts?
Just opens the door.
Yeah. 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 This is a ministry my brother runs. So that voice you heard was my brother. He does a lot.
Sounded like you.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Is it on YouTube?
He's just releasing it this fall. So my brother is an artist, and they're just putting this into more things. So this is all like non-public videos so far.
That's the website. Hopefully.
That is the website. It's all.
So
it's the whole idea is to challenge assumptions that people have that leads them to a conversation. So the whole idea is you start with like 5 to 30 second Instagram story videos that lead to a video like this, that leads to another video that's a longer answer that brings in the gospel, that leads to a full website that explains the gospel, that leads to local stuff. So it's all digital content.
Yeah.
Steiger, our mission, we have teams in cities all over the world that are specialists at reaching the global youth culture, and we engage with local churches, and these are going to be tools that support that. So we're going to, in cities, we're going to, digitally target those places, and then that'll lead to relationships that we establish on the ground. But it's going to be on YouTube, so anyone can use it.
I appreciated it because it transcended all of the gaps, the race, gender, age gap.
Yep.
It was very, very good.
You want to see another one?
Yeah.
Here's another one. Here's one more.
Do you ever wonder what we are? They call us human beings, but what does that even mean? My science teacher told me I was a product of my DNA. Molecules in motion, flesh and blood, a highly evolved animal, nothing more. Really? A highly evolved animal? It's not that I don't see the connection. We are born, so are they. We need food and water to survive. We grow old, we die. We seem to be and do so much more. We paint, we dance, we sing, we invent. We make incredible works of art and cry when we watch sad movies. We get up early and stay up late. We work tirelessly with extraordinary discipline, not for warmth or survival, but so we can play to the beat, hit the note, and run fast. It seems that we are something more. We will sacrifice ourselves to save somebody else. We'll climb a mountain just to say we did. We will be so moved by people in poverty, we will devote our lives to make a difference. We form parties, commit terrible crimes, strive to make great change. We start wars, but we also fight to end them. Animals in all of their beauty, diversity, and complexity, they don't do any of that. Think about it for a minute. Really reflect on the idea. You and I, highly evolved animals? I don't buy it. We're maybe highly evolved, but animals? We might be made of the same substance, but there's something different inside of us. I think if you take a closer look, I think you would see we weren't made by this world, and we weren't made for this world. And knowing that, that could change everything.
So, but I think.
So, was that your brother doing the narration?
That was my brother, yes.
Those videos are great, too. I mean, so can we just say thank you, Jesus, for good videos?
Yeah. Thank you, Lord. You know, I just wanted to say I am blessed to see the progression over the decades. You know, as Christians, we use the tools. Because, you know, before many of you were born, I remember in 1975, when billboards were the main way to reach people before internet. And Campus Crusade had this campaign called I Found It. And thousands of billboards across America had I Found It for an entire month. And then everyone's going, what in the world did they find? And at the end of the month, it was like new life in Jesus Christ. And so it's just, but that was the tool of the era. So it just brings joy to me to see, wow, you know, people that have created using the tools that God has given us right now in the progression. Yeah. Because everyone has, in every era, has the tools that they're given. How great is that?
Let me just wrap it up with this, because I think this is important, is that in the end, the presupposition challenges are good, but in the end, the gospel is the message of the cross.
Right.
And so we need to get people to the message of the cross. And we have arts and creative things that you know, actually, here, give you an example. This is one of our band's creative ways of lifting up the message of the cross. But the idea is, Paul said in 1 Corinthians 2, 1 through 5, that he preached Christ and him crucified, paraphrasing a little, so that people would not be convinced by human wisdom, but by God's power. And what people need today is to experience the power of God, and the message of the cross is the power of God. And if we leave the cross out, then we're leaving the power of God out. And so I'm all about, obviously, these videos that challenge the assumptions, but if that is where it ends, we're selling people short. They need to hear the message of the cross. However we end up doing that, that is the answer. I was, you know, when I was going to college, I was studying international business and law, and I had this vision of changing the world, and I had this revelation that all injustice, all pain, all suffering is a result of but one thing, and that is sin, and there's only one solution to sin, and that's the message of the cross. So that is what people need to hear. And we need to use our creative gifts to communicate the message of the cross that in the language that people can understand. And that doesn't always mean the cross in the classic sense. I mean, the death and resurrection of Jesus is the message we need to communicate. So how do we do that in a way that connects with secular audience? And so that would be my challenge, is don't end it there. And I can tell you, and I'll show you a quick video here, when you lift up the message of the cross, you see God's power at work, and you see see people respond. And we've been working for years in tough, cynical places in Europe, and I've seen tough, cynical European young people come to Jesus because they experience the power of God through the message of the cross. So just as a source of encouragement, I'll show this video and then we'll wrap it up.
I really like the message because in Belgium, you learn at school that God is not real. But you are saying, feel about God, you really like Jesus, and it comforts me.
Sądzę, że po takim przedstawieniu, po takim widowisku, na pewno jestem w stanie uwierzyć w Boga. Jest osobą, która dziś powątpiewa, a to, co pokazaliście, naprawdę do mnie dotarło.
Ta kapela gdzieś taką izbę, tak ognisko rozpaliła się.
Ja, ale to jest really question. They got me a message that I've never understood before. I never actually believed it. I know there's something in that message that gave me the chills. I know, since I put my hand up, I felt different than all of this. It sounds weird to say.
It's just amazing. When I prayed with you today, I felt complete. I think it's the first time in my life I felt really complete.
That's cool.
That's cool. So what do you think is going to change in your life? I'm going to believe in God. I'm going to find a purpose in life, I think. Because now, I don't know what I have to do. Just living life day by day, but I don't like it.
Yeah.
I just want a purpose to live for. A reason to live your life, you know?
Yeah.
Jaka część tego jest? Jeszcze do tego jest pewnie? Wiem, że to jest trochę długo dla ciebie, ale co to zmienia w tobie? Chcieliśmy wyłożyć parę zdania, co completely different look on God and on the world.
That's why we do it, right? So, couple of things to wrap up, and I'll be around to talk. This world's broken, but we've got the answer. We've got to get it out there. As a mission, just a little context on us. We started in Europe. We're doing stuff in a lot of places all over the world. We feel like God has called us to come to the U.S., even though that's where my family's originally from, because of the way the culture's changed and the post-Christian culture, and that the church needs it. So we're actually beginning to do stuff here. I'd love to partner and connect with any of you if you feel like that would make sense. I've got a couple of resources. I have a few of these books, Revolutionary, which are for artists, 10 principles that will empower Christian artists to change the world. Anyone wants to take one, you can take one for free. Jesus Secular World, this is written by my brother, the guy who did the videos, that talks about how to engage the secular world. A lot of what I've talked about in my last session, so you can have a few left of those. If you're interested in about Steiger, we have some information here. Other follow-up, we do have a podcast called Provoke and Inspire that my brother, my dad, and a couple others do weekly. That is all about how to reach people in the secular world, how to see God's power displayed outside the church. And so you can check out that podcast if you want to engage in this content on a more consistent basis. Podcast, by the way, another form of content that we need to be engaged in, not just from a Christian perspective, evangelistic. So, and yeah, if you have any interest in our mission, you can go to steiger.org. So, any final questions before, how about I pray to wrap it up? Yeah. It's always a good idea, right? So Lord, thank you so much that we could be here together. And I pray anything that is from me and not from you would fall away. Lord, we don't need human wisdom. We need your wisdom. We don't need human strength. We need your strength. Yeah. And so, Lord, you see the world around us. It's broken. It's desperate. It's searching for an answer. And we have it, Lord. So help us to communicate it. Help us to use creative means of any kind to communicate the uncompromised truth of your gospel to a world that's so desperate for it. Thank you for everyone here, Lord. I pray that they would be encouraged. I pray that they would be boldened. And I pray, Lord, that your name would go further than it ever has before. Pray this all in your mighty name. Amen.